Hi, everyone. I'm Leo Janofsky. I'm a solutions architect at Amazon Web Services. And I'm going to talk to you today about what Amazon Web Services is, its history, a brief overview of the services that we offer, and also I'll do a live demo of how to launch a LAMP stack in AWS, both on a single instance and through using some of our other managed services, such as our relational database service and our load balancers and our instances. So first, let's talk about AWS history. So how did Amazon, .com get into this cloud computing business? Well, Amazon's really good at providing a big selection of products and shipping those to customers efficiently. And behind that capability lies years of experience with operating data centers, with logistics, with all kinds of things. And so we discovered over the 10 years that we wanted to enable our customers to do a lot of different things, right? So we ended up offering some internal services up to third-party sellers. And so we published simple web services such as our catalog search, and it became really apparent really fast that developers were hungry for more of our services. And so this led us to develop AWS. So we asked, what if we could package everything we do and offer it to others over the web? So the AWS mission is to enable businesses and developers to use web services to build scalable, sophisticated applications. And web services is what now people now call the cloud. So in 2006, AWS was born. Let's talk about what AWS actually is. So we provide different services in different tiers. So we have kind of our core services are compute, storage, and database. And then we also have a networking layer. We've got a global infrastructure, so we've got regions around the world and availability zones around the world. And then we've got higher level services, like application services that you use to build horizontally scalable applications. And then we got deployment and administration services. So these are services that you use to deploy your code to AWS and to administer your AWS account as it scales. So let's talk about our global infrastructure first. We have 11 regions around the world. So we just added a new region a few weeks ago in Frankfurt. But each region is like a separate cloud. So these services I'm going to talk about, they exist in the different regions. In the US, there's a region in Northern Virginia. There's a region in North California and in Oregon. The region in Oregon is also carbon neutral. We also have a region in Oregon called GovCloud. So if you have a workload that needs to be ITAR compliant, so that's International Traffic and Arms Reduction Treaty, you should use GovCloud. So the important thing about this is that you pick and choose where your data goes and where your apps go. So we don't move your data across regions or across availability zones if it's a service where you can choose the availability zone. You can pick and choose where it goes. You can move it. We give you tools to move your data, but we won't move it for you. And so within each region, there's at least two availability zones. And we'll talk about what those are in a second. And there's also 52 edge locations around the world. So edge locations are basically for our CloudFront content distribution network and our Route 53 DNS service. And so there's a lot of them because they're closer to the users because those are latency-based services. So latency matters for them. So this is what a typical region looks like. And then within each region, there's, like I said, at least two availability zones. An availability zone is at least one data center. Sometimes it can be more within the same geographic area. And our availability zones are designed to be on different floodplains, fault planes, to have distinct power utilities, and different tier one ISPs. So you should design your application in mind where something can happen in one availability zone, so you should spread out your application multiple availability zones because they're built with these redundancies in mind. And so we power a lot of businesses that you recognize. So from Airbnb to Netflix to Dropbox to Yelp, we have kinds of startups and enterprises that run workloads on us. In the public sector, we've got all kinds of government agencies that run on us, edtech startups, universities, the Obama campaign. Ran basically all of their stuff on Amazon Web Services. And just to give you a perspective on our scaling, on an average day, we had enough new capacity, server capacity, to support Amazon.com's global infrastructure when it was a $7 billion business back in 2004. So that's how much we add on an average day. So the general concept is, you know, if you think about how do you get power? So you get power, it's on demand, right? So you know when you're getting it, you know, you can get it. It's uniform, so you know what voltage you're getting. It's pay as you go, so you pay for exactly how much you use. And it's available, so you plug in, you know you're gonna get power. So we've taken that and extended it to computing. So this solves a lot of problems. We typically see a lot of a lot of IT organizations, they have this capacity problem. So they have certain amounts of IT needs, and then they have to over-provision their capacity. So either they're way over-provisioning, or they don't have enough capacity and they have unsatisfied customers. So for example, these are different loading or different patterns of traffic. So whether you have things that turn on and off or grow fast or have variable peaks or predictable peaks, for all these, you're either going to over-provision typically, or you're going to under-provision. So either have waste or you have unhappy customers. So what AWS allows you to do is you can scale up and down dynamically based on what your actual usage pattern is. So you can pay just for what you use. And you can launch instances. So instances are a word for a virtual server. You can launch one instance. You can launch thousands of instances in minutes or seconds, just as much as you need. And you can dial it up and down as required. So let me talk to you about an example. It's kind of close to home. So this is a typical traffic chart for November for Amazon.com. And the last two peaks here, does anyone know what they are? So they're Cyber Monday and Black Friday, right? So traditionally, what Amazon.com had to do was they had to provision capacity to cover those two peaks. So as a result, 76% of the time, they had too much capacity. And only 24% of the time were they fully utilizing it. And so in 2010, Amazon.com turned off its last physical web server and moved it to AWS. So this is what the traffic pattern looks like now. The capacity is just above what's actually needed. So why do we see customers adopting cloud computing in AWS so quickly? Well, agility. So that's the primary reason that we see. Why is agility important? Well, it allows customers to do things that in the old world took weeks or months to do them in minutes or seconds. So you can do things like spin up a whole new dev or test environment, spin up a whole new DR environment, spin up 50 instances or 1,000 instances for peak traffic, remove those 1,000 instances, set up a HPC cluster or a JS cluster. You can do that all in minutes on AWS. So what this leads to is a culture of innovation. So you can experiment often, you can pay only for what you use, and you can fail without risk. So if you try something out, you've paid for a few hours of usage, it's not a big deal. You haven't put a big capital investment up front for that. So what are customers actually using AWS for? Well, so the University of Notre Dame, they moved their website over to AWS. They have an average of about 38,000 visitors per day to their site, but it can swell to 150,000 during sporting events and football games. So they moved their website over to us, and now their website can support a 500% increase in traffic, all the while they've saved 40% over their existing on-premise setup for their website. NASA JPL, they used AWS to live stream the Curiosity Mars rover landing, and so they find out only 6 days in advance that they needed to find another provider from the regular provider for their live stream. It was also the same time as the Olympics, so they couldn't buy CDN capacity anywhere at the time. And so they basically set up their own content delivery network on our EC2 service in 6 days, and they were able to have it scale up to their needs. They were, I think, envisioning about 1 million viewers. So it was a really interesting technical feat. They used, Adobe Flash Media Servers and Nginx caches, and they were able to deploy whole clusters of these programmatically as needed, and then they spun them down when they didn't use them anymore. The Obama campaign in 2012 used AWS for over 200 applications that they hosted on the platform. They had everything ranging from call tools to payment processors to mobile applications to volunteer organization websites to big data analytics tools. And everything had to work on election day. So, to move election day would require a constitutional amendment, so that wasn't going to happen. So all their systems were going to have to work on day one. And they did. So let's talk about the actual services. So first, the networking services. So Amazon VPC is the virtual private cloud. It is basically a software-defined network that lives on top of your EC2 instances and your RDS, which we'll talk about, and ElastiCache. And so you can define a private address space for your instances. You can break that up into public subnets, private subnets. You can do VPN connections to your on-premise data center. You can then also extend your on-premise address space to the VPC. You have power to manipulate the route table, so you can customize things. You have network access control lists in the VPC. So it gives you a lot of flexibility over what you have running in AWS. Then there's AWS Direct Connect. So Direct Connect is a private connection to our regions. So you can get a 1 or a 10 gig link or multiple 1 or 10 gig links up to a region. So if you are uploading a lot of data or downloading a lot of data and need private connectivity, that's an option there. There's also Route 53. So Route 53 is our DNS service. It does all kinds of interesting things. So it supports health checks. So you can, say, run two copies of your website at the same time. And if one of them fails, you redirect traffic to the other copy. Or you can do geography-based records. So you can route traffic from one country to one cluster, from another country to another cluster. You can do A/B testing. So you can have 80% of your traffic sent to one copy of your website and 20% to the new copy of your website and see which one performs better. So you can do all kinds of interesting things there. You can do latency-based records, so you can have copies of your website all over the world and have users sent to whichever one is closest to them based on latency. It also has deep integration with AWS services, so such as our load balancers and S3 and CloudFront. So it's really easy to point things to CloudFront distributions or ELBs or S3 buckets. Then there's EC2. So EC2 is our virtual server service. You can run Windows, you can run Linux on it. You have full control of the operating system. There's different flavors of Windows and Linux, so Red Hat, Debian, Ubuntu. We have our own distribution called Amazon Linux. You can pick which one you want. There's different types of instances, so there's over 27 instance types at this point. So there's different instance families based on different workloads. So there's general purpose instances, which are just, you know, if you don't know what you need, you can start with those. There's compute optimized, which are great for things like web servers, right? There's memory optimized instances, which are great for things like relational databases. There's instance or storage optimized instances, so these have big SSDs on them, so they're great for things like Mongo or NoSQL, right? And then there's graphics optimized instances, which are great for GPU compute and cluster instances. And lastly, there's cost optimized instances. So if you're just trying to experiment, you can get a bunch of low cost instance types that are great for that use case. Then there's auto scaling. So auto scaling is an API for EC2. It allows you to horizontally scale up and down tiers of EC2 instances. So let's say you have a bunch of web servers, and like in the Notre Dame case, you normally need to have two of them, but you might have to scale to 10. Well, you can use auto scaling to automatically trigger scale up or down events based on metrics. So CPU usage, latency, you can do custom metrics, so it's pretty open-ended there. You can also scale based on a schedule. So if you know that you're gonna have a lot of traffic on Monday at 6 a.m., you can scale up on Monday at 6 a.m. and scale down on Monday at 5 p.m. You can also do it based on just command line commands. Right? Then there's Elastic Load Balancing. So Elastic Load Balancing is a managed load balancer. So you click a button, it provisions a load balancer for you. The load balancer lives in multiple availability zones. It does SSL offloading. It can forward ports 25, 84, 43, and anything over 1024 for TCP traffic. It does connection draining, proxy protocol support. So it's a very featureful load balancer, and it's got integration with auto scaling. So when you're using auto scaling and you're scaling up and down, you can have your instances automatically join or leave a load balancer, an Elastic load balancer. So then there's our storage services. So the first one is Amazon EBS or Elastic Block Store. These are persistent volumes that you can mount to your EC2 instances. So you can snapshot them. So when you snapshot an EC2 or EBS volume, it goes to S3, which we'll talk about in a second. There's three different types of EBS volumes. There's magnetic EBS, which is just stored on magnetic disk. It's the most economical option. Then there's general purpose SSD, where you get 3 IOPS per gigabyte provisioned. So if you have 1 terabyte volume, you have 3,000 IOPS. And then there's provisioned IOPS. So provisioned IOPS is when you pay for how much disk space you use and how much IOP capacity you need. So you can provision up to 4,000 IOPs per volume. So then there's the Amazon S3. So Amazon S3 is our object store. So Amazon S3, you can use it to store just any kind of data. You can use it to store static websites and host static websites. You can use S3 for backups and archives in some use cases for as your source and output bucket for big data analytics or transcoding. It also can be used as an origin for a CloudFront distribution. So S3 is super powerful. S3 is designed for 11 nines of durability. So what that means is it can sustain the loss of at least two data centers at the same time without losing your data. You can do encryption on S3, so server-side encryption or server-side encryption with your keys. So if you want to manage the keys, you can do that as well. And then there's Glacier. So Glacier is our long-term archival service. It is also designed for 11 nines of durability, but it's for when you want to save something and forget about it, right? So whether for compliance or other reasons you need to archive something, you should use Glacier. So Glacier costs 1 cent per gigabyte per month, and Amazon S3 starts at 3 cents per gigabyte per month. So Glacier is less expensive, and Glacier takes 3 to 5 hours to get your data back. So if that's okay, if it's an archival case, then Glacier is probably the right use case for that. Then there's Storage Gateway. So the Storage Gateway is a virtual machine that you can run locally in VMware or Hyper-V. It gives you an iSCSI endpoint. You can then set up another VM on top of that that exposes that iSCSI endpoint with SIFS or NFS. Anything that goes into that network share then gets backed up to Amazon S3 or Glacier or EBS, depending on how you set it up. So it's an easy way to get your data up to AWS. So then there's our database services. So the first one is Amazon RDS. So this is our relational database service. So this is a managed relational database for you. It will support SQL Server, Oracle, MySQL, and Postgres engines. It does automatic failover. So if you have the multi-AZ option enabled, it does synchronous block-level replication across availability zones. And then if your secondary fails, it'll automatically, or your primary fails, it'll just automatically fail over between them. It also, for the MySQL engine, supports read replicas within the same region or across regions. And there's all kinds of interesting options there. So it'll do your backups for you. So it'll back up to S3. It'll do your patching for you as well. Then there's DynamoDB. DynamoDB is our managed NoSQL service. For DynamoDB, it takes away all the administrative burden of managing a NoSQL service for you. So you just provision the table, and you say how much read and write capacity you want, and we'll deliver that for you. So it's an extremely simple service to use. Then there's ElastiCache. So ElastiCache is our managed caching service. It is basically a managed Redis or ElastiCache. So again, you can provision a cluster of ElastiCache or Redis instances and not have to worry about backups or failover or any of that stuff. Then we have our application services. So CloudFront is our content delivery network. It lives on those edge locations that I talked about before. So CloudFront can be used for live video streaming, for on-demand video streaming, and for just having a website, so hosting a website. So you can have a website hosted on Elastic Load Balancers or instances or S3 buckets or just on on-premise hardware, and you can put a CloudFront distribution in front of it. It'll cache your content, it'll put it on the edge locations, and so when somebody goes to your website, they'll be hitting CloudFront, which is going to be probably closer to them than whatever the origin is, and it'll offload a lot of the load off the origin, thus both saving you money and increasing, getting a better user experience. Then there's Amazon Cloud Search. So Cloud Search is a managed search service. So you send it your searchable data and talk to it through an API, and it'll do search results for you. Then there's the Elastic Transcoder. So it's a managed transcoding solution. You put your videos into an S3 bucket, tell it what to transcode into, what format and what size and everything. And it'll transcode it and put it into an S3 bucket for you. And then there's our big data services. So we've got Amazon EMR, which is Elastic MapReduce. So this is a hosted Hadoop framework. So you can spin up a Hadoop cluster from one instance to hundreds of instances if you need. It's got deep integration with S3, so as a file system for it, you can use HDFS, which you traditionally do with Hadoop, or you can do S3 as the file system. It's got support for spot pricing, which is on Amazon how you bid for our excess capacity. So it supports all that. It supports, you know, common Hadoop frameworks such as Spark and Shark and Hive and Pig. We've seen over 5.5 million EMR clusters launched at this point on Amazon. Then we've got AWS Data Pipeline. So Data Pipeline is a service that allows you to move data across our different data stores. So you can take something from S3, put it into RDS, then do some EMR on it, put it into Redshift, which is our data warehousing appliance, and then you can pull something out of an on-premise MySQL instance. So there's all kinds of things you can do with that. Then there's Redshift. Redshift is our managed data warehouse appliance. It's meant for to be petabyte scale, so you can store lots of data on it. It's a massively parallel architecture, so you can have many nodes if you wanted to. And it does all the backups and all the administrative stuff for you. And then there's Kinesis. Kinesis is our real-time processing service. So you can take some source of real-time streaming data, so say like the Twitter firehose or a bunch of log data, send it to Kinesis. Kinesis handles all that for you, and then you can connect workers to it to pull things out and, say, do a live dashboard or do live analytics on it. So then we have our deployment services. So AWS OpsWorks is a DevOps framework. So you take your application, you break it up into layers. So you've got your load balancer layer, your web layer, your app layer, your database layer, and you provision things on those layers based on Chef recipes. Chef is a configuration management system. It also supports lifecycle events, and so if you don't want to manage your own chef, right, if you want to have some kind of programmatic way to deploy things onto your instances, this is one option for you. Then we have Elastic Beanstalk. So Elastic Beanstalk is a service that allows you to, say you're a developer, you have your code in a Git repo, you don't want to have to worry about deploying your own ELBs or RDS instances or regular EC2 instances, so what you do is you from your code, just send it to Elastic Beanstalk. Elastic Beanstalk will provision RDS instances and ELBs and all that stuff for you and deploy your code onto them. So it makes it a lot easier for developers to deploy their code onto AWS. Then there's CloudFormation. So CloudFormation is a service for treating your infrastructure as code. So now that you have all this stuff in your application, you've got your VPC and your security group rules and your EC2 instances and your RDS instances, so you've got this whole architecture on AWS, well, how do you programmatically spin that up or recreate it? You can write a JSON file that represents all of that, and then you can take that JSON file and deploy your infrastructure off of it. So you can have an architecture where every time you deploy code, it spins up a fresh copy of your whole architecture and then fails over to it. So you can also do this to have immutable infrastructure. Then finally, there's our administration services. So our administration services start with Amazon IAM, so it's Identity and Access Management. So that allows you to manage your AWS account, so you can have sub-users and groups and do identity federation, all kinds of stuff. It's really important for security. Then we have Amazon CloudWatch, which is our metrics service, so it gives you CPU usage and all kinds of metrics, and you can do custom metrics, and you can do auto-scaling based on those metrics. And then we have CloudTrail. So CloudTrail is our service for auditing. So it will log API calls against Amazon Web Services. So who rebooted this instance, who changed this security group, and log them into an S3 bucket so you can see, you know, what happened in your account and who did it. A new service that we have is Workspaces. So it's a desktop virtualization on AWS. So you can provision a workstation, a Windows workstation, and it will then come up in a few minutes. It'll be connected to your Active Directory, so with your users, you can easily rebuild it. You can easily provision a new one. There's different types with different software on there. So now that we've gone through a lot of our services, let's do an actual live demo. So I'm going to switch over to my web browser here. So what I'm going to show you is how to quickly set up an EC2 instance with WordPress on it. And then we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to spin up RDS instance and an ELB. So we'll do it just on the instance, and we'll break all the tiers out as well. So let's launch an EC2 instance. So the first thing, which I've already done here, is you're going to want to have a key pair. So a key pair allows you to log into the actual instance. So you keep the private part of the key pair, and we put the public part onto the instance, and that's what allows you to log in. So I've already imported my key pair, just my regular SSH key pair here. And so the other thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to start, I already have some instances running, but I'll launch a new one. So I'm going to pick my operating system here. So as you can see, I have a pretty big choice of operating systems. So I'm just going to pick your standard Amazon Linux. And I'm going to pick an instance type. And since this is a web server, I'm going to do a C3 large because it's probably compute intensive. So I'm going to pick a C3 large. And I'm going to launch one of them. I'm going to leave it in the default VPC for now. I'm going to leave all this stuff alone. And I'm going to enable CloudWatch monitoring because CloudWatch detailed monitoring changes CloudWatch monitoring from a 5-minute resolution to a 1-minute resolution. So I want that with my web server here. And then I'm going to go to storage. So I want general purpose SSD on here. 8 gigs is probably enough for me, so I'm just going to keep that. I'm going to label this WordPress. I'm just going to label it WordPress demo. So this is a tag, so I know what it actually is. And then I'm going to configure a security group. So a security group is like the firewall for the instance. So I'm gonna use one of my existing ones. So this security group, it enables SSH, so I can SSH into it, and it enables HTTP. Now, I'm going to want to lock down that SSH a little bit more. You don't want just anybody from any IP address SSHing in, so we'll do that after it launches. So I'm happy with all this stuff here, and I'm going to launch. And then I'm going to choose what key pair I want. So I'm going to choose that key pair that I updated before. So now that I'm waiting for it to launch, let's go look at our security group. So we've got security groups here. Here is my security group that I put it in. I'm going to just change this here. So make this a little bit bigger here. So I'm going to change this from anywhere to my IP. So that will automatically pick up my IP address here and lock it down a little bit. So while that instance is spinning up, let's spin up some stuff for our other instance where we're going to break out the database and the load balancer so that it can be ready for us. So the first thing I'm going to want to do is spin up a load balancer. So I'm going to choose a load balancer here, and I'm going to call it WordPress VLB, and I'm going to just, all I want is port 80 in here. And for now, for the health check, I'm just going to do TCP. So if Apache is running, it'll be good. And I'm going to lower the healthy threshold just so it becomes healthy pretty quickly. Then again, this has a security group. So I've already made a security group for this called WordPress ELB. And it's basically just going to accept traffic from port 80. And then I'm not going to add any instances to it for now. And I'm going to skip the tagging, and so we're going to create this ELB right now. So created a load balancer. I'm also going to launch one more instance here just for the web part of my WordPress. So here we go. I'll just do the same thing I did before. So C3 large, CloudWatch detailed monitoring enabled, general purpose SSDs, call this WordPress web, and I'm going to choose I already have a security group for this. So the security group accepts traffic on port 80 from my WordPress ELB security group. So from the security group of my load balancer, and also SSH, which again we're going to lock down. So I'm going to launch this. All right, and then what I'm going to do next is I'm going to launch an RDS instance. So RDS is going to be my database. So I'm going to go here. I'm going to go to RDS. I'm going to launch a new instance. So I'm going to pick my engine. So here I have a choice of MySQL, Postgres, Oracle, or SQL Server. I want MySQL. And so I'm going to say yes. So this is an option for multi-AZ. So multi-AZ, again, does replication. So it's going to spin up two RDS instances and do replication between them. And if I don't want that, I can just have a single instance. But I do want that. And then I'm going to pick my database engine. So I'm going to pick the latest one here. And then I'm going to pick what type of instance I want. So I want an R3, so that's the memory optimized instance. So I'm going to pick the R3. And I'm going to pick yes, I want multi-AZ. I want general purpose SSD. And I probably, I want a little bit more storage. I'm going to have 10 gigs here. And then I'm going to pick some credentials. So what's my identifier for my database? So it's going to be WordPress DB1. Call this root. I'm going to give it a password. And we're going to pick a security group for this as well. So I've already made a security group for this. And then I'm going to give it a database name. So we're going to just call it WordPress. And we're going to choose a retention window so that this does backups for you. So I want to want a week of backups. And I don't have a preference for the backup window. And I wanted to automatically upgrade my minor version here. So I'm going to leave that as default. And so now I'm launching my RDS instance. Right, so now it's being created. So now we're just waiting for it to install. So while that's going on, let's log into the first EC2 instance we made. So is this WordPress demo, and we'll just verify that. Yep. So let's see if we can log into it. So I'm going to copy the public host name of it. I'm going to open up a shell window here. So I'm going to see if I can do SSH. The default user is EC2-user. And so let's try to SSH in. Yep, so I'm in my instance right now, so I'm SSH'd in. It's up for 5 minutes, so it's definitely my instance. So the first thing we're gonna wanna do here is it's telling me that, I have some security updates, so I'm just gonna run every security update on here. Yum minus y update. So it's gonna quickly install those. Next thing I want to do is I want to install some more stuff. So I'm going to have to install MySQL. I'm going to have to install Apache. I'm going to have to install PHP. I'm going to have to install the PHP plugin for MySQL. I'm going to have to install the MySQL server. So let's install all this stuff. It's installing. So that's done. So now I want HTTPD. I want Apache to start on boot. So I'm going to do this. Okay, so now if I reboot this, it'll start. I also want my SQL to start on boot, so same thing. Oops. Typo here. All right, and then I'm gonna want to actually start my, I'll start my my web server later. Now I want to start my database server though, so do this. And so it's starting for the first time. So I'm going to have to do some basic steps here. So the first thing I'm going to do is set a root password for my MySQL. So I'm just going to run this MySQL secure installation command. So it's got no current root password, so let's set one. And I'm going to remove these anonymous users that it creates and disable root login. And remove test databases. So this all kind of productionizes your MySQL install. So that's done. So now I should be able to connect to my MySQL server. So I'm going to see if that works here. Yep, so I'm in on my MySQL instance here, or my MySQL server. So now the next thing I want to do is I want to create my WordPress database. So I'm going to do MySQL admin. So, all right, so I've created my database. And now what I want to do is I want to create a WordPress user. So I don't want to log into my WordPress with a root user because that would be bad. So I want a user that can only access the WordPress database. So let's go in here again. And we're going to run this here. So what I'm doing here is creating a user that can connect from localhost that's identified by my super secure password here. And then I'm going to grant this user access to the whole database. All right, and then now I should be able to log in as that user and only see that database in the test database. So I'm going to do MySQL minus u WordPress instead of root. All right, and I should be able to do. All right, so I can see my WordPress database here. That's great. So now we need to actually download and install WordPress. So let's go to our web directory. So I'm going to wget WordPress, the latest version of WordPress here. All right, I'm going to extract that. All right, and now I'm going to swap the HTML directory, which is the default web root, with the WordPress directory. So, all right, and now I'm gonna just change the permission so that the Apache user owns the WordPress directory. All right, and lastly, I'm going to start up my web server and hope everything works. All right, so now let's see what happens here. So I'm going to go here and see if I can get into this instance here. All right, so here's our WordPress setup screen. So we know all this information. So our database name is WordPress. Our username is going to be WordPress. I've got my super secure password here. We're going to be connecting to localhost. And we're going to run the install. So now we're just going to give my website a name. So Leo's Amazing Blog. We're going to do a username. I'm going to do a password for my username. I'm going to put in my email address. And since it's a test one, I don't want search engines to index this. So now we're installing WordPress. So now we're all set. So here's my WordPress. And here's my dashboard. Fully functioning WordPress. I can update the plugins here if I want to. Do whatever I want here. And so here's my actual fully running WordPress on my one instance. Now this is great if you have a test site, but this doesn't scale. We have one instance. We can make that instance really huge, but at some point you're going to run out of vertical scaling room. So you're going to want to scale it more than that. That's why we spun up all this other stuff. So let's see if our RDS instance is done. So our RDS instance is almost done. So it's OK, because in the meantime, we can set up our EC2 instance. It's going to be just a slightly different procedure. So we've got our WordPress web now. I already had one running yesterday. So I just got to figure out which one was it that I launched today. So this one was launched November 4th. So that's the one from today. And this one was launched 4 p.m. So actually, this is the new one. Yep. OK. So So this is my new instance. So again, I'm gonna SSH into it. So let's go back to my terminal here. So I'm gonna get out of this one. I'm gonna SSH into the new instance. All right, so I'm gonna have to do some of the same stuff here. So I'm gonna run security updates. I'm gonna install some packages. The packages are gonna be slightly different now. So I'm gonna not, I don't need the MySQL server because we're breaking that out. So I'm gonna do, I'm still gonna install the MySQL client. I'm still gonna install Apache. I'm still gonna install PHP and PHP MySQL. I'm just not gonna install the MySQL server. Then I'm still gonna make sure Apache starts on boot. I'm going to now, so now we need the database to be up. So while we do that, let's add this instance to the load balancer. So we're gonna go to our load balancer here, and we're just gonna copy down the instance ID. Get my instance ID here. I'm gonna go to my load balancer. So here's my load balancer. Here's its DNS name. So it's got zero instances in service right now because I haven't added any instances to it. So I'm gonna add my instance. So here's my list of instances. So I want this one. So I'm gonna add this one to it. Now it's going to wait, and it's not going to enable this instance until it becomes healthy. And it's not going to become healthy until I turn on my web server. So let's see if our RDS instance is back up. All right, great. So our new RDS instance is ready. So this is the endpoint for my RDS instance. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to connect to my RDS instance. So this is a fully managed MySQL database. It's got backup set up on it. It's redundant. It's spun up in only a few minutes. So now I should be able to SSH into it from here, not SSH, but log into it with the MySQL client. So So here I am, I'm in. So now this is gonna be similar, except we're just breaking it out. So again, I'm gonna actually get out of this for a second. I'm gonna, we already created the WordPress database because we put a WordPress in there. So I'm gonna create the WordPress user, and there's gonna be some slight differences in here from what we did last time. So we're gonna create the WordPress user, but now we're not gonna be logging in from localhost anymore. We're gonna be logging in from the EC2 instance, and we're not gonna necessarily know about what IP address it's coming from, or we don't wanna specify to that granularity. We're gonna have security groups that make sure that only our web servers can connect to this. So I'm just gonna allow from, at this level, from any IP address connection. So we just did that. And now we're just gonna have to, again, grant this user access to the WordPress database. So again, I'm just gonna change this to a wildcard. All right, so we've got that. Let's get out of here. So we'll just make sure that we can log in now. I'm just going to change my username to WordPress. All right, so we're in. So that works. So now we're going to, again, have to set up WordPress on this instance. So what we're going to have to do is go to var www. I have to move the HTML directory to html.old. All right, and we're going to have to download WordPress. All right. Extract WordPress. We're going to move it to the HTML directory. All right. And we're going to change the permissions. And then we're going to start Apache. So what should happen now is there's going to be basically five retries on this. ELB, and it's eventually this instance is going to become healthy on the ELB. So let's do it here. See, the instance is not yet healthy. So what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to change the health check a little bit more just to make it quicker. We can change it back later. So let's say I want healthy threshold of 3 instead of 5. Okay, so now we're in service. So now I'm going to go to this load balancer, and it should proxy me back through to this instance, and we'll set up WordPress on here. Now, if you have your own domain name or something, you can just do a CNAME record to this DNS name. And the Elastic Load Balancing Service is scalable on the back end, so it scales up and down its own. So you shouldn't, it could be multiple IP addresses, the IPs could change, so you should always reference it from that DNS name. All right, so here we go. We're back at our setup screen. We're going to do the same process almost. So our database name is WordPress, our username is WordPress. Got the same super secure password as before, except the database host is now going to be the RDS instance. So we're going to go here, we're going to go to RDS, we're going to go to my instances, I need my endpoint name here, it's this one, so I'm just going to copy and paste this. All right, so let's see if that worked. All right, so that works. So you can connect to the RDS instance. Again, it's going to be Leo's awesome blog. All right, and so now we're going to install our WordPress. So we're done. So I'll just log in to make sure it worked. So again, so now we've got a fully running WordPress. We can do all kinds of operations on it. So the difference now is that we have a separate database. That database is redundant. We still only have one web server. But we could now take an image of this web server, launch it again, and then we have two web servers behind this load balancer. The endpoint doesn't change whether it's one or two or 50 web servers. We can scale it beyond this. So there's plugins for WordPress where you can use S3 for your static assets. You can use CloudFront to cache those assets. You can use ElastiCache, so you can use Memcached, basically, to store session state there. So as you scale from one to more instances, you're going to assume that those instances are ephemeral, so they can go away. So you got to think about, where do I store logs? Where do I store session state? How do I make it so that it's OK that these instances can disappear, or more of them can appear? So you're going to have to answer questions like that. But it's a fairly common pattern, so you just start offloading any persistent things to other tiers. So now we've got this redundant three-tier thing. The last thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to make my load balancer a little bit more solid now that I've that it's marked as healthy. So it's usually not a good idea to do for websites to do TCP health checks because your Apache could be up, but it could be returning PHP errors. You don't want that. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to change this to an HTTP health check. And it's going to be index.php, not index.html. And we're going to change this healthy threshold back to 5. So that's done. So it should still be healthy. Yep, so we're still in service. So that's how you set up WordPress on AWS. So I think in less than 20 minutes, we've both set up on a instance on its own and a full three-tier architecture where each tier is independently scalable. Can do all kinds of interesting stuff with the database to scale as well. Let me show you one more interesting thing here. So let's say for this, I want to break out the reads from the writes. I can create a read replica. So I'm going to just create a read replica. So it's going to be WordPress DB1 read1. I'm going to do it in the same region, but I could do it in a different region. So we're going to start provisioning a read replica here. So now we're creating a read replica that's being created there at the bottom. So you can do all kinds of cool stuff here. So I'm done with the demo. So I think we have about 10 minutes. So I'll take any questions anybody has about any AWS-related topic. Anyone? Cool. All right. Thanks, everyone.